Hey, it's Andrew. And just quickly before we start this episode, I want to tell you about one of my favorite podcasts. It's the Bare Knuckles and Brass Tacks podcast. Not only does it have a great name, it also has a really good format that's interesting. The two hosts are both named George. That's not what's interesting about it. It's that George K is on the vendor side and George A is a CISO on the customer side. And they have real conversations, sometimes with guests, about the world of vendor-customer interactions. They're not afraid to call out bad behavior on both sides and talk about the weird and wonderful nature of this world of ours in cybersecurity. Recent favorites of mine are the one about building trust called Taking a Flamethrower to FUD and Buzzword Mumbo Jumbo, and also the one with someone who's a field CISO and advisor to startups called How Security Buyers Think and Go-to-Market Strategies for Young Companies. I'm not getting paid for this promo. I just really enjoy the show the two Georges put on. Check it out. It's the Bare Knuckles and Brass Tacks podcast. Now on with this episode. For too long on this podcast, we focused on just the sales side of growing a cybersecurity company and ignored our friends on the marketing side. So I decided no more. In the spirit of togetherness and shared goals and kumbaya, we're going to get some cybersecurity marketing experts on here and work together as we should be doing in every company. And there's no better place to start than the Cybersecurity Marketing Society itself and their founder and CEO, Gianna Whitford. Stay tuned to learn what the good people inside the society are discussing, working on, and transforming. This is a good episode, and it's a lot of fun too. Welcome to the Cybersecurity Go-to-Market podcast, where we tackle the question, how can cybersecurity companies grow sales faster? I am your host, Andrew Monahan. Our guest today is Gianna Whitford, founder and CEO of the Cybersecurity Marketing Society. Gianna, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on, Andrew. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, you're not the first marketing type person, let's say, that I've had on the podcast. We've had a couple before, but you are the first practitioner. Like you've worked at cybersecurity companies, and you're obviously a key, important person in the world of cybersecurity marketing, given that you run the society. Now, how many members do you have in the society right now?
Wow. First off, a key important person. Thank you so much. Very flattered. Have not been called important before, and I like it. So I hope people listening start calling me that. And we have about 2,900 members, all in-house, full-time marketers at security products and services companies, and about 800 companies represented around the globe in our membership.
So, and you're very inclusive of a bunch of people, except for salespeople, it sounds like.
Well, we love salespeople, but the society was founded on the idea that marketers needed a community, and we've kept it that way since then. Although, who knows about the future? And of course, we have opportunities for sales folks to engage if they want. We have a conference in December, and anyone who's in sales who wants to come hang out with a bunch of marketers, which is of course the most favorite thing that y'all like, feel free to come in December.
Very good. And what happens inside the society? What's the secret things that we're looking in from the outside, wishing that we were part of?
Collaboration, co-marketing, mentorship, helping hands. Our community is built on the mission of helping marketers in this challenging, technical, fast-paced, and constantly changing industry succeed in their careers. And so we have all these opportunities inside the society for marketers to work with each other, to help each other, to make connections across all these different industries. Security is collaborative, and security marketing can be collaborative too.
So Gianna, you have a great deal of experience in marketing and tech, and specifically in cyber, right? You were at Bandura Cyber for a little bit and Vatira as well, and then you moved on to do the society. What we thought for the audience today we would do is tap into, I guess, more your more recent experiences with the society, right? You know, what's going on inside that black box that salespeople are not allowed to get into.
I want to say we love salespeople, by the way. Let me interrupt and say that. We love salespeople, okay? Like, even though it's a black box.
Marketing people always say that, and they say something very different when they're amongst themselves. So let's pick out some things to talk about, right? So we got three topics that you were thinking about What are we talking about inside the society that's relevant for sales? So we're not talking about, I don't know, conversion rates on a three-step email campaign, right? We're going to talk about some of the topics which are relevant for salespeople.
Oh, absolutely. And I do want to say that the society's opinion and approach is that sales is the engine of revenue for, you know, marketing and sales are friends, just like marketing and security are friends. So everything we do as marketing should be to drive sales for the business in some end way. So things that are hot right now, because we're recording in March of 2024, which is like 1 month away from RSA. Some of the hot topics that are relevant to salespeople, I think there's these three things I've identified. So RSA conference, of course, because we're sending all of our teams there. There's going to be a big trade show booth. There's going to be parties. There's going to be customers. There's going to be analysts. There's going to be media. There's going to be all of this happening at the Super Bowl of security, and how to do it effectively, efficiently, and make it so that when we send our teams out there, that they come back with deals and opportunities is top of mind. Other things is quality of intent data. Intent data is, so all of you in sales and security know that security is very competitive and, you know, usually venture backed at a lot of companies. So there is some budget potentially for like tools and things that can put you ahead of the game. So there's a lot of talk about intent, the future of intent, intent data. Is it working, right? Because when you set up an intent data platform and you are aligned with your sales team, right? We're like, okay, we're going to have this thing where it tells us that these types of accounts are searching for tools that are similar to ours. And therefore, we can all prioritize better and try to be more like efficient and intentful with what we're doing to get customers. There's a lot of talk internally about, does that work? Is it working? Is it bullshit? Is it not? So that is absolutely something that marketers in the industry are talking about, you know, behind these closed doors about like, hey, I bought this. Is it, what do you see? I bought this. What do you see? Is it working? Is it driving pipeline? Oh, they want me to pay more. Like that's some of the conversations we're having. And then also a big topic because of the economy and where we are, in this stage and in the big kerfluffle of layoffs and budget reduction and all of that is brand and how brand is being left behind. And of course, you might be like, well, that's like way far up in the funnel. That doesn't have anything to do with sales. Brand drives demand and brand builds trust. So if you are like, we literally just had a conversation about this yesterday. Trust opens doors. Trust in your brand and being a trusted company helps people come to you and also know you. It's so much easier for anyone to say, I work at Palo Alto Networks than like I work at little baby company that no one's ever heard of that's doing something that might go under in 2 years, right?
Yeah.
So trust in brand building is a huge topic always in this society and especially now given that budgets have been cut. So we have less money for brand. It might be, quote unquote, fluffy marketing stuff, right? Billboards. And how does the logo look? And like, does it make you feel something, right? But actually, it's a really important engine and lever for down the funnel activities.
Well, let's talk about those in turn then. I've got...
Sure, because I talked for a while.
I've got some thoughts on each one. So let me tee up the first one. So RSA... I love the way you said that. A Super Bowl of our world, right?
Two other people have said it before me. I copied them.
it's to some people, it's the biggest reunion you can go to. To others, it's a great venue to find new opportunities. Let me kind of paint what I think might be bad behavior or a missed opportunity, right? And that's the company that says, okay, I'm going to get my booth, my whatever it is, 10 by 10, or maybe go smaller and want to get one of these 6x4s or whatever it might be. They spend who knows how much money. Maybe you can tell me how much people spend to get these booths. And then everyone just stands there in the booth and they kind of wait for everything to come to them. And you kind of walk past and you see, 10 people in the booth. They're all got the vendor's shirt on and no one's talking to them. And they're not talking to anyone else. It's to themselves.
They're looking at their phone. They're eating a sandwich.
Yes, yes. And they're waiting for things to come to them. So how do we not do that then, Jenna? What's the much better way to approach this?
So I am very militant about booth and booth look and booth activity. So I will tell you this. For 4 summers, I worked as a traveling flower saleswoman. So we would load up a truck with flowers, like a refrigerated box truck, like a decent sized truck. And they gave the keys to these, young folks in college who've never driven a truck. And we would drive up and down the East Coast and all over the country, putting up tables. and then putting out flowers in these heavy, like water-filled buckets. We would bring like hundreds of flowers to these events and we'd sell them at colleges for, you know, for commencement ceremonies, basically. And I loved this job. I loved it a lot. And the one thing I took, the main thing I took away from that job is you must look every single person in the eye walking past you and engage them. Regardless of what they look like, regardless of anything, you always, there was a phrase we use, always be holding. You always had to hold a flower up. Your arm would be hurting like crazy at the end of the day. Always had to be holding the product up. This was a physical product. It wasn't a SaaS security solution, but always had to be smiling, friendly, engaging people. Occasionally I'd get on a table and do carnival barking. Like this is, that was my, that influenced, because I was one of the best salespeople there. Again, flowers, not security solutions. But that influenced my everything, every trade show activity I've ever done since then. If you're at the booth, you got to be like someone that someone wants to talk to. You got to be smiling. You got to be
welcoming,
friendly, welcoming. You got to talk to people. You got to be like, hey there. Like, you know, people who don't want to engage, won't engage. But there are lots of people who are curiously walking by and are willing to talk. You know, is there some sort of engagement thing at your booth that gets people in a line to your booth where you can give the pitch to every single person? You have to be like awake, alive, welcoming. And you have to go out there also for security and stuff, right? I don't have my salespeople always at the booth. You should also be at the conference meeting people as well. I don't know. Andrew, what's your thoughts? I'm ranting and raving. I feel like I'm like talking too much here.
Let me ask you a higher level question. So sometimes on the podcast, I've got a made up company called Cyber Donut. All right. Cyber Donut is a company with, I think we say Series A or seed. They've got 5 to 8 salespeople. They've got 20 customers. They're trying to, you know, classical early stage cyber company. They've got something that they think is really cool. They're trying to make their mark. Should they even have a booth at RSA?
Depends. They could do early stage expo. Early stage booth actually gets a decent amount of traffic, I would say. There are definitely folks at RSA who are looking, who are walking around looking for future investments. I'll also say RSA is also a VC show. Like this is a place to go meet investors as well. There is media opportunities at RSA and the early stage expo booth is not that expensive. So I can't remember off the top of my head because it's been a while since I've done early stage, but it's cheaper than the regular booth size. And then what you are is that you do have a presence at RSA.
Right.
The other, and I got it. You didn't say how many marketers work at Cyber Donut, by the way, Andrew. How many marketers work there?
There's two. There's a leader and then there's someone who takes a lot of the slack and does all the hard work.
Okay. So there's like a product marketer and a demand gen person, maybe, or a VP of marketing and like an ops person. Okay, cool. So it's hard to say. So I don't want that to be like, Giannis says all Series A Cyber Donut companies should go and have a booth at RSA. I'm just saying that actually at these huge conferences, I think the early stage stuff can be more valuable than the later stage.
Yeah.
Like they could be more valuable for early stage companies than later stage companies, depending on how you do it. A lot of factors involved. The other thing you could do is attend and just walk around. You can, as a marketer, join the Cybersecurity Marketing Society and find a co-marketing party opportunity. You could have a party with someone else and just split the cost there.
Yeah.
And then get like a bunch of people in a room together and you're in there with them, you know, with them and with your co-partner. So
you could also get a suite, right? And share the cost of a suite with two or three companies.
Yeah. Get a cost of a suite. Have your VCs and have your investors introduce you to people. Go and hit up the media while you're there. There's less and less media every year at these big conferences, but they're still there. You'll have an opportunity if your founder or your head of product is trying to court the analysts. The analysts are there. There's a lot. People shit talk RSA conference for a lot of reasons, both valid and invalid. And there is ways to make it work at various sizes, stages, and budgets.
I'm trying to think. So I went to the early stage expo the last couple of years, and you're dead right. I saw that it was off in a different room. I was like, this is going to be a disaster, right? Who's going to go up there, right? I walked in that room. It was packed. Every time I went in there, there was people. There was, you know, proper people as well, not t-shirt baggers, right? Proper people walking around with titles, you know, because they want to go and learn about these new companies. So I was super impressed with that. And in talking to some of the founders that were there, they were like, yeah, this is actually, you know, good use of their time and the money they spent, the whole thing. And where I've had more successful shows is where we've put a lot of effort into booking meetings ahead of time.
Yes.
And having some sort of access to a meeting space, a suite or something. And it puts a lot of stress on the sales team because you're literally becoming someone who gets people to attend a suite because it's a good idea, right? But they're very valuable, both for top of funnel, but also for mid-funnel opportunities as well, right? You get to get the CEO, the founder, the CTO in a room with your five biggest deals. You know, it's very valuable.
Exactly. Your customers are there. People forget your existing customers are there. Like what, you know, mid-funnel, like you said, stuff that's still in the pipeline that's progressing, you get to meet face-to-face. When did we get to do that? All of our customers are across the country, like across the world. People come to RSA internationally from other countries. People come from Singapore. People come from India. Like there, where you're selling, there is a, it's not 100% chance. There's a chance your existing customers are going to be there. And like anytime, my opinion, anytime we can like schmooze and hang out with our existing customers, get them excited, put your face in front of them, remind them that you're a person and they like working with you as a person and as a company, like that is gold.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Where do you stand on the gimmicks to get people to your booth? Last year, there was a Tom Cruise lookalike. There was a t-shirt printing going on. There's people with bars. Where do you stand on that sort of stuff?
I love gimmicks. I'm going to say it. I like the gimmicks. It gets people in your booth. And then you could pitch your product while they're waiting in line. Or you could talk to them while you're waiting in line. And all sorts of people like gimmicks because people like fun. It's even in our stressed out, like very serious industry.
We're all humans.
People right? like fun. It's cool that it's silly and fun that Tom Cruise was there. I was at that booth. That was the Pickisk booth. The Tom Cruise lookalike. People were there. People were coming to take photos. And then they would go to the counter they had and they talk to the founder and like chat and like grab a coffee. Like if you're going to do a booth, an element of fun is wonderful. You saw the Wiz booth. That was just wacky. Wasn't it awesome? It was so weird. It was like, oh, we're in like, okay, we're in like, what was it? It was, oh geez, you know the movie. It's not Alice in Wonderland. The one with the red shoes clicking together. I want to go home. I want to go home. Everyone out.
You take me back to a time in my life I've forgotten about.
Yeah, Kansas.
Oh, Wizard of Oz.
Thank you. Oh my God. Yeah, that was so fun. It was just like, they had like a magician. It was, of course, there's some people who are going to be like, all these boots are like just, this is like a freak show, but a lot of people like it.
Well, that's the thing, right? So, it is polarizing.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you an easy target for those that are grumpy about stuff like that. I get that, right?
Sure.
But what would you prefer? Would you prefer to be standing there in your little, small little booth and just hoping people come to you because you got some brochures or you got a nice screen with a demo on it? Or you have some way to drag people in? Some people might get put off by it, right? You have to be okay with that, but at least you get people to talk to and engage with, I guess, right?
Exactly. Invite, you have some sort of experience that people can, that is unique and different. And it's like, huh, that was neat. So of course that people say, oh, the CISOs aren't walking around RSA, like trade show booths. Okay. One, that's not true. Two, maybe less CISOs are, sure. But there's also the rest of the buying team. There's like the people who use the product also walking around. And sure, it's polarizing, but you can't please everybody all of the time.
No, you got to do something to stand out.
Exactly. And if you feel your customers do not like it, then like you said, don't have a booth. Just come and like rent an airplane or a helicopter ride and invite customers that way.
What's the best thing you've seen? What's the thing that you've loved? You looked at, God, those guys were bold. They went something and did a helicopter ride or I don't know what, right? What have you seen that you've loved recently?
Oh, in all of my years at RSA, RSA conference, sorry, because RSA is a security company. I already talked about it, but the Wiz booth stands out. I think the Sentinel One Tree stands out from a small perspective, from like a smaller company perspective. I love the Halcyon. I hope I'm pronouncing them right. The Halcyon booth. It just makes you feel like you're stepping into a surf.
It's the orange kind of glow thing they had, right?
Yeah, it just makes you feel like you're stepping into a surf club on the beach.
Right.
Mark Bliss, I don't remember what company he was at. I think it was Mark Bliss. He was doing, he did one year just like Hawaiian themed, like, and then they gave away ridiculous prizes. They gave away like humongous blow up surfboards and like humongous blow up pool toys. So they're easy to pack in your suitcase, but then you come home with this like pool toy that's probably worth like $200, like this insane, ridiculous thing. There's been a lot of great at RSA over the years.
There was one, I'm going to contradict myself a little bit because I remember what this company did last year, but I don't remember the name of the company. So I don't know if this means it doesn't work. But they did something really interesting. They had a pretty big booth, and they had one wall of the outside of their booth, and it was like a wall of heroes, and it was all their customers. And it was photos of people, not just logos. It wasn't a NASCAR slide on a wall, right? It was actual people. Here's the VP of security architecture or whatever, and some quote. And here's their pictures on there. I thought that is cool, right? Make them the hero of the story, right? And then maybe direct people to it. And people kind of, as I did, I stopped and started reading about all these people, what they were saying.
That's wonderful. So you and I don't remember exactly, but their customers remember. The people on the wall will remember. And the friends of those people will remember.
Yeah.
Because they probably went by and took a photo and said, oh my gosh, you're on the side of the booth here. Like, hey, I was walking past and I recognized you on the X brand booth, right? And what a nice gesture also by the company.
I think so. I think it was the same company where the show they put on, the pitch or the speech they put on every hour, right? The 5 minute, whatever, was always done by a customer, not by their SE or their rep or their CTO or founder. It was all done by a customer. I thought that right there, and they had a big crowd, right? Because it's, you know, it's a little bit different.
It's real life stuff. Yeah. It's like, hey, I am using this product to solve this problem, or this problem matters to me, or here's my thought. I don't know what the talks were about, but I assume they're tangentially related to the product.
Yeah. They were. Well, that's RSA. I love RSA. It's a lot of fun. Tiring. Mm-hmm. But fun. Let's go to number two, intent data. This is maybe where you were going with this. My first inkling of intent data was a number of years ago. I was at a super early stage startup and we bought, I don't know which service it was. And I got a note through from the marketing team saying, Wells Fargo is interested in our stuff because the intent data thing triggered this, and this. We should go target Wells Fargo. And I said, well, there's 10,000 people in IT in Wells Fargo. Mm-hmm. Where do you suggest I start? Right.
Yeah.
And that's where the conversation ended. Right. So I had something that said, well, I know probably of 10,000 people, someone was looking at. I don't doubt that, but I need more than that. Right. Is there something more I can go with? So is that an unfair characterization of intent data? My like kind of grizzled salesperson's view of it, or where are the state of intent data these days?
So I'm not invested in any intent data solution, and I've used quite, so I have like no sort of like, yeah, intent data, or like, boo, intent data, this provider or that provider. I have purchased a bunch of different solutions for the companies that I have worked at, all the way from like the account level. And some things just come with like a Zoom info package, right? Like Web Insights, you can see, oh, we expect that Wells Fargo is on the website. And it's like, okay, who? There is, like you said, a million people who work at Wells Fargo. And like a bunch of them are in IT and security. Banks have the biggest security teams. Who the heck was on this site and why? And what do they do? And were they, you know, are they relevant? So there's varying levels of intent data solutions. When I, early on in the game, when I purchased my first one, I had one that gave you the location of where where the search was coming from. And of course, that's not perfect, but it was always cool to see, even because you can use this, you can check this against your existing customer traffic, right? You can check that, you know, the intent provider said that, you know, someone from Wells Fargo went to your website and was on your pricing page in, you know, Indianapolis. And then you could look at your HubSpot and you could say, oh, okay, Joe Schmo, who's the IT director at Wells Fargo and lives in Indianapolis, visited our pricing page. So there's ways to kind of, it's not foolproof. There's ways to do a little checking of like, oh, okay. And it involves a lot of work and like digging.
So should marketing package that up then and say, we did the groundwork, the next bit, here's what we found, here's the possible 15 people it could be? Or do you want to hand that to sales and say, look, you got to run with this and figure this out yourselves?
Before purchasing any intent solution, you guys should have that figured out before.
Okay.
This is not like marketing purchases something and then shoves it onto sales and says, look at this, you know, that's one. I think that actually that's one of my biggest mistakes. If we go back to that question, is once in an overzealous, super happy, aggressive, like, oh my God, this amazing intent data product will help us determine, you know, help us. Because, right, these accounts, I've lived my life at the, like the Series A level, right? So you're targeting enterprise. Is where I've lived my life. You're targeting enterprise. These accounts are huge. These accounts are prestigious. These accounts have 5 million people trying to contact them. Every single other security solution and product is reaching out to these accounts. How can you, and they're secretive, how can you, you know, back end into who is interested in you so that we can help our sales team prioritize their time? Because an overwhelming, just like on the security team, an overwhelming amount of alerts is like kind of useless. It's kind of like, great, 10, like 400 things are interested, you know, 400 ding, ding, dings, like, oh, focus on this, focus on this. Focus. Like that's going to make everyone insane and be not effective and not targeted, right? So I have made the mistake of purchasing an intent solution, thinking it's really cool and not being super aligned with sales. And then when the alerts come in, they're like, what do I do with this? And I'm like, can you reach out? Can you try and target? Here's some material. Like we're going to run ads, but it's not aligned. So we don't have a plan in advance. The point that I'm trying to get to here is you have to have your plan in advance, right, Andrew?
Right.
It'll be different for different companies. It might be like, we have an awesome SDR team and they're going to be super aggressive. Or it might be like, oh, let's plan an event around that. And then can you guys invite, you know, prospects to the event, you know, and we'll have it themed around this thing. We think these customers might be more open to accepting this invite because we see that they're on our website and we maybe know directionally where they live. So we think it's these 10 people. And it's also up to like how much RevOps you have also, because there's a lot of like manual shit involved in all of this.
And when you look inside the society, is the general feeling just still big optimism about intent data? Is it like, oh, we've been hit so hard or dinged so hard about this a few times, we're not so sure about it anymore? Where's the general feeling?
Optimistic, because it's one of the few ways that we can be able to understand web traffic at a better level. It helps us make better decisions. It helps marketing potentially make more targeted, you know, campaigns and things, right? Like, oh, like these companies helps us be better at our ABM strategy if we're going after key accounts with our sales teams, if we're doing that together. So I think it's in a trust but verify phase, sort of like intent data is cool. If you can get it, that's awesome. It's not going to solve all of your problems.
Right. So one more data point then to say, yeah, this should be prioritized, this company. Let's do some ABM against this company because we've had some pings on the intent side, right?
Yeah. I mean, like it is gold to see like X company visited your pricing page or something. Like how amazing is that to run that as a signal into your system? If someone's on your pricing page, that means they most likely are looking to purchase or exploring options. So it gives you, it definitely can give you an advantage if it's set up right. And if you believe in it and if you trust it, it can give you an advantage of where even potential future RFPs, future things might be coming down the line.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I think it's so much promise there. And it seemed like, I mean, like my story was from probably, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. So nascent of intent data in those days. I'm sure it's matured a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of promise when done well.
It's very expensive too.
Is it?
The providers are very expensive. Yeah. So there's a lot of like, okay. And just like any tech tool you buy, there's a lot of promise in it. And then it's on you to figure out if it's worth it.
I love your analogy of alerts though, right? It is the classic, you know, good news is we're getting all these alerts, bad news is now you have to figure out which ones to go after and how to triage them and who to assign them to and things like that.
Yeah. What's a level one? What's like a hot, you know, it's easy at a trade show. It's like the person who wants to book the next meeting, but then all this digital stuff, it's hard to, it's part of the whole structure and process. And what marketing should be doing is like helping both drive that stuff in and then also determining like what's hot.
Yeah.
You know, okay, we believe because of these signals, this is like a really good opportunity, like a more than X percent chance of someone like replying to you if you actually reach out.
Yeah. Jenna, let's learn a bit more about you personally. I've got a list of 35 questions here. I want you to pick three numbers to be more than 35, and I'll read out the corresponding questions for you.
Cool. I choose 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, I'm just kidding. How about 13, 7, and 29?
Okay. First one is, how did you first make money as a kid?
I didn't make money as a kid. We didn't have allowance, and I didn't have a side hustle job. I think if you can count 14 as a kid, though, which I think actually looking back, 14 is quite young. That was when I got my first job at McDonald's. It was the summer of eighth grade, and I went to go work at the local McDonald's, and that's when I started making money.
They were employing 14-year-olds at McDonald's in those days? I don't think they do that anymore, do they?
No, they don't. It was in New Jersey, and shortly after, they raised it, I think, to 15 minimum. But I was in early. I got in. I was grandfathered in as a 14-year-old, so...
That's great. The second one was 7. All right. Most embarrassing moment in your marketing career.
I've done all the traditional embarrassing things, such as send the email out to people with, you know, the blanks in it. I've done the flub what the product does at the trade show booth. I've done that. But my most embarrassing moment was when my boss was talking to someone and he assumed that I had done something, a task that I needed to do. And I had not. And the person he was talking to was like, this isn't done. And he got mad at them. And it was a third party. It was not internal to the company. And so I had to tell him, no, I didn't do that yet. And I'm planning to, but I didn't. So it made him look dumb or bad. And that was one of, I hated that. That was one of my worst moments.
Did you step in and say, stop, don't blame them, blame me? Or do you let them go a little bit and then recover afterwards?
Well, I was not on the call, so I could not say anything. So after the fact, he was like, I told them you did it. And I was like, I did not. Sorry, Todd.
Never put your boss in a bad position like that, right?
No, I don't want that to do that.
Was he someone that would go off on the third party then? Is that?
No, he's not. He's a wonderful, wonderful person. He was just, it was just not, it was my fault. And it was not a good look for me or for him or for us. And that was my most embarrassing moment.
And the last one you had, here's the question. What is the story behind you getting into your first job in cybersecurity?
This one is a little weird, and it makes me think that at my heart I'm a salesperson too. So I'm glad to be on this podcast.
Oh, easy now. Don't be claiming things that aren't, you know.
So, like 6-7 years ago, I was working for South by Southwest Pitch, identifying interesting startups to invite to come pitch at their big conference in Austin. I was doing that on the side. I had invited, they had a security category, and I had always loved cyber, like as a layperson, as much as a layperson could. I was always like, ooh, a strong password. How cool, you know, stuff like that. And so I had invited this interesting company that was in based in Baltimore. I was like, oh, here's a cool startup. And they got in and they got to come and pitch on stage at South By in front of a huge room of investors and potential prospects and customers at the big conference they have in Austin, Texas every year at South By. And I was feeling like I wanted to change my industry. I was in commercial real estate investment and development at the time. And I had previously had experience in tech. And so I went up to them and I was like, hey, great job. Oh my gosh, I can't believe you got here. This is amazing. And do you guys need any marketing help? And they said, maybe. And then what I did was I emailed them every 2 weeks for the next 4 months until I got a job there. And that's how I got into cyber.
That's some good persistence right there.
Yeah.
That is some persistence.
And when I did eventually leave the company, that was in the email that my boss sent to everybody at the company announcing that I was leaving. So it was like, that's one of my proudest moments, I think. And just like everyone, just like most people, I almost tripped and fell into it, into cybersecurity.
What about that move then? What was the thing that worried you the most that you're thinking, I really want to do this, but I'm not so sure about this thing here?
Well, what worried me was that maybe I had become rusty because I was working in, again, commercial real estate investment and development. I had worked in tech marketing before, but it'd been several years. What worried me was that was that I was rusty. When I got into the industry, it was very different. It was even different than my big tech job. It was, wow, this is really weird. There's so many acronyms. There's so much going on. There's all these buyers who are, you know, grumpy. We're trying to reach these various titles. Like all the titles mean the same thing, but they're also different. And it was just a lot to wrap my head around. And that's actually why the society was founded. So I had met my co-founder, Maria Velasquez. She worked at a different security company at the time. She worked at a data diode company. I worked at a threat intelligence company. So we didn't compete. And I was asking her questions about the industry. I was like, what is RSA? Like, what the hell is Black Hat? Like basic stuff that just coming from another industry, you're like, boom, your head explodes. You're like, this is so weird. So she basically took my hand and helped me enter this industry and showed me the ropes. And it was so amazingly helpful to me. And that's why we started the society. Because I said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we had, instead of just me and you, like learning and growing together? Because I was giving her, you know, she would ask me things, I would ask her things, and we'd share our thoughts and our experiences in marketing. I was like, what if we invite, like, what if we got more people together? So we started a Slack community with 10 people in it. And then it's just basically organically grown to where we are today.
Wow, I didn't know that part of the story. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's it was weird entering this industry, and the help of others is what made me successful. And we want to pass that on to other people.
And you mentioned Maria, she's your co-host as well on your podcast, weren't you? I'll butcher the name, so I'll let you say the name of the podcast.
Absolutely. It is a long name. It is Breaking Through in Cybersecurity Marketing. There is also podcasts out there called Breaking Through in Cybersecurity, but we threw marketing at the end, on the end there. And it is on the CyberWire Network, N2K's CyberWire Network.
Well, let's move on to brand, Jenna. Anyone that's been listening to podcasts for a while will have heard me rant about this a little bit. And I'll give you my point of view, and I'd love to get your thoughts and from the society. Is that,
let's fight.
No, I think I don't know. I think you might like what I say. As I feel like, 3,700 vendors in cybersecurity, plus another couple of thousand resellers, another couple of hundred, consultants. It's very noisy.
And all the channel, right? Like you said, resellers. There's also the MSPs, the MSPs, the MSSPs, the VARs, system integrators.
There's thousands of them, right?
Yeah.
And my point is, this is not a time to be timid. Right. This is the time to really think through your brand, to think through about how you want to have people meet you for the first time online, or wherever it might be, and gain an impression of you. This is a time to actually be bold about these things and maybe, splash a little bit so that people can notice you and get an impression. Wiz, lots of good things Wiz did over the years, right? And we could spend hours talking about it. But one of the things that I, looking in from the outside, was they've not been shy about, being very, they look a certain way, how they engage in a certain way, the messaging is tied into all that. They've done a very good job. And I kind of look at Wiz, I look at Mandiant back in the day. Mandiant was the absolute trusted, people to go to. Anything to do with breaches and investigations, and we didn't call on the experts, it was like default to Mandiant, right? And that was hard won through Kevin Mandiant and, how he went about going to market. So I think it's super important. My general impression is that not enough companies are putting enough effort and time into doing this well. I don't know what you're seeing inside this society.
Yeah, I mean, we just had an episode. You guys it'll be coming out soon, hopefully, with Aria Block, head of brand at Island.
Oh.
So Island popped on the scene just like a fully formed company. You're just like, whoa, this came out of stealth and it's like a real company. And I think that use case, the use case of Wiz, like the example set that we just mentioned, do show the value of brand. The problem is that brand is not attributable, right?
Mm.
So brand, if you want to run a billboard or a big campaign or do something really cool that you cannot track back to clicks or to, Salesforce pipeline, or anything that's like a quote unquote metric. If you are a stealth company, a Series A, and the marketing team says, hi, we want to spend $300,000 on the brand, like, or something like that, 50,000 plus, right? How is that getting through? You have to have a team set in place that understands the value of the trust building that brand creates. And for most small companies, startups, Series A, early companies, that is an investment that doesn't show ROI off the bat.
It's not producing leads, right?
Yeah.
Salesperson's not sitting there going, I love that thing you did. Here's all the leads I got from it.
Yeah.
And then, when things aren't going, great, and there's no flood of pipeline and fingers starting getting pointed a little bit, it starts going, well, we spent $300,000 on brand, and what do we get from that, right?
Right. We did like a logo, right? People think it's arts and crafts, it's design, that it doesn't matter, right? They think it's arts and crafts. And Nimi Reckenberg used that, who was the CMO at Simplify, which was acquired by Google a couple years ago now. He says, we're constantly trying to push back against the idea that marketing is arts and crafts department, that we run around and we like we're like, oh, pretty colors, and like, ooh, pens at the booth, you know, stuff like that, right? Of course we have to have a cohesive brand identity. We have to have swag for the booth, right? These are things that need to happen, and they're important. I'm going to say that.
A brand is not logo though, right? This is what people, you know.
No, brand is like, logo is a piece of brand, and brand is the identity and feeling of the company. It is that trust builder.
Yeah.
So, but it's just going to be impossible for many companies to invest in that. It's truly impossible. So I think a good example, one, because of budget, two, because of leadership who don't believe in that sort of thing. And I totally understand where CEOs and founders, you know, are coming from. They're like, okay, we have X amount of runway. We have X burn rate. I hired two marketers. I gave them X budget. And we have a sales team. Like, we need to get deals in before we can invest. But that's just the state of the industry. And brand, I think, is more important than ever in this industry.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's, I think I heard this analogy the other day. I don't think it's my own, but it's like, you know, deciding to build a car and then, you know, saying that your investment in the design of the car and the way it looks on the outside is somehow not going to help people buy, right, the car. You got to look at it as a whole and say, look, it's a package of goods. And then I heard someone else say, you got to look at these things as almost like a VC might in terms of investments. We're going to put some dollars behind 10 programs. And I can't sit there and go, well, program 9 delivered, you know, 832 MQLs that turned into this much pipeline, right? You got to look at it as a package of goods that you're putting out there to try and get some attention there.
Yeah, it powers your demand. Brand really does power demand. We had a Tom Wentworth, CMO at Recorded Future, be the keynote at our Cyber Marketing Con conference last year, and that was a message we were trying to flow throughout the conference, which is don't forget about brand, because brand is the first thing that's cut. Like, we're okay, budget's cut. Are we going to cut like all these lead gen programs? No, we're going to cut the brand stuff. And it's tough.
So I love that a CEO of a cybersecurity company was out there speaking, getting some attention, making a splash. Do we see enough of that, do you think, out there?
CEOs.
For the startups?
So Tom was the CMO, but the for CEOs, the... Oh, I love a good forward-facing CEO. Marketers, so here's the thing. When evaluating like new companies, how splashy can your CEO be is actually important. It's actually something I consider in my efforts. Like, are they a public speaker? Like, or are they just going to hide behind their desk and work on the technical things and not be able to share the exciting stuff about the product, the service, the category they're creating?
Yeah.
So, I do think you see CEOs doing it well. Do you know, I forget his name, Dope Security CEO?
Oh, yeah, I forget, Kamal Agarwal, is it?
I think so, yes. He does a great job of being like a face. So on a very small team, everyone has to be a marketer. And if your CEO is a good marketer, that's such an asset to have internally.
Definitely is. I was at a company, cybersecurity company, 10 years ago probably now. And our founder, CEO, CTO, 28-year-old, but when he spoke, people listened. He just had that thing.
Yeah.
And it was compelling. You'd see really grizzled either VCs or CISOs just start leaning forward and, you know, paying attention. And he just had that gift. And then I worked at a company after that where it was almost like the opposite. And I know where I put my work in from after experiencing both, put it that way. And then you look at someone like Mike Fay at Island, right?
Yes.
Very compelling when Mike talks, you know, he has a way of doing it. Kevin Mandia, George Kurtz, mm-hmm. You know, these people, when they talk, they just have that gift of communication that people just start quoting them and they get all the attention that they deserve and probably a lot more.
Mm-hmm. They become your media people. Same, you know, I'm going to also say same with the sales people. Like if you're a salesperson can build an audience, can, I don't want to say become an influencer, but that's also a boon. At a previous company, I worked on trying to help train and tell the salespeople, not tell, but work with the salespeople on building their own presence as well. Because it's a boon for your company now, for your team to be like people that other people listen to. And then it's a boon for your career too. Like if you move to, like, I know everyone here knows that like a company typically is no longer like a lifelong job. So it's good for the company in the present moment to have people who are forward facing, if possible. Not everybody has to be, but like if you can be forward facing, be like someone who speaks publicly, someone who can talk to media, someone who can command a presence, all of that. That's a boon for the company now. And then I would always say it's also good for your career because you will become known, and then you could take that skill elsewhere and do the same thing.
And are people inside the society talking about that individual person building their brand and how it ties into the company brand? Is that a topic?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because as a marketer, like the individual. So in terms of, you know, in terms of hierarchy. So let's just take LinkedIn as one example. In terms of hierarchy of interest of posts, company posts are low. Nobody gives a shit about your company's post. Like you will post, you know, we have this big release. Great. Like hopefully all your employees share it. Right. And hopefully it gets some attention that way. But what is really interesting is when you have faces in your post. Posts with faces, like team photos that tag people, that show people, always, 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 always get more engagement and more views and more exposure than posts that are just like, cool threat thing, you know? So internally, yes, there's a whole like division of like, for if you're a social media manager, there's this whole part of your job, which is like, employee presence on social platforms. Again, I'm boiling this down to LinkedIn. And that is something that we as marketers always think about. Like, can our team speak? Can we get more people in product to talk? Because usually they don't, or development, because usually they don't want to. Can we get people in front of the media? Can our salespeople talk on stage instead of sending our founder everywhere? Like there's this mix of activities that all employees have a part of. In the sort of like the social presence and influencer presence of a company, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I was talking to a friend last week and he was at an event and someone from Wiz was going to speak at the event. Mm-hmm. And Dan looked at the list of speakers and the guy's his name was whatever, but his title was like Enterprise Account Manager.
Wow.
And he's like, oh my God, they have a sales rep. This is like a CIO CISO event. You have a sales rep. Oh, this is going to be a disaster. But the guy was awesome.
Yeah.
And Dad said, you know, he had the right tone. He's obviously been trained and how to go about doing that as a mm-hmm. seller, you know, the whole thing. And I feel like, well, if you're as a seller, you can put yourself in a position where you're able to do that and you don't feel like you got to get there and pitch your company. But you're talking about challenges and issues in the industry and, you know, things like that. Then you're elevating yourself above everyone else. And this guy was basically putting himself in the same bucket as the CEOs who were talking at the event. And he was just a seller, you know, at Wiz.
Exactly. They do a lot of this internal, I think, sort of like support of the employees. Like you'll see Wiz is like everywhere and all the employees love Wiz and they drink the Wiz Kool-Aid and it's great, right? So it's amazing that, like you said, a salesperson comes up at the same caliber of content and talk. Right? They know the story. They know the category. They know the problems. They are a trusted seller. They're a trusted partner to these CIOs, CISOs, and potentially CEOs. You know, they are, it puts you at a level that is, and sales is a legitimate, like, it's a great job. Like, salespeople are important. They are the revenue engine of companies. Like, without sales, there wouldn't be an IT department anywhere. There wouldn't be CISOs. There wouldn't be marketing. Like, sales is really, really, really important. But people look down on that salesperson who does go up and just does a pitch. So this can absolutely, if you can like learn the story, learn storytelling, like work with your marketing team, ask them if they have any support or resources. To be honest, they might not, because it might be a cyber donut and the two people there are desperately trying to get you set up for RSA, right? Like it might be like, we don't have like something right now, but let them know you want to be like a forward facing person. Like, oh, I'll speak. I'll do a video. Oh, we need a little snippet on, you know, what is MFA or like, what's the state of cloud security? Have your salespeople. If you're a salesperson who wants to start being more forward facing, like raise your hand. Of course, it's not going to immediately lead to revenue for you. It's not like doing a, like meeting a customer or prospect or something. And you might be too busy as well. But if you have that time, like, why not?
You know, I love that our discussion around brand went down to mm-hmm. what a salesperson can do. I mean, it's not just an amplification of the company brand, but their own personal brand and how you want to position yourself. And I love that we were able to get there. Jenna, this has been a great conversation. We're kind of out of time right now. Super interesting hearing the perspective that you have and also, you know, people inside the society. If someone wants to get in touch, what's the best way to do that?
Absolutely. And I love to be on because I think we didn't even go through half of like be on again because I don't think we went even through like half of our convo. Our talking points. People can contact me at Gianna at super long URL. Gianna at cybersecuritymarketingsociety.com. Gianna is spelled G-I-A-N-N-A. I would love to talk with anyone who wants to. Also, hit me up on LinkedIn. I am listed as co-founder and CEO of the Cybersecurity Marketing Society. You can find me on LinkedIn. Happy to chat with anyone who wants to talk more about any of these topics.
And we'll see you at RSA, I presume, right?
Are you coming to our party?
I've not been invited.
Well, it is Sunday on May 5th. It's right after the booth build closes that day. It's at 5:30 to 7:30 at Novella. It's a ticketed event, but we are marketers and we know how to throw a party. So I hope to see you there.
Love it. Look forward to it. Good to chat and look forward to seeing you again in San Francisco.
Awesome. See you soon, Andrew. Thank you so much for having me on. Really appreciate it.
It would mean a lot to me and to the continued growth of the show if you'd help get the word out. So how do you do that easily? There are two ways. Firstly, just simply send a link to a friend. Send a link to the show, to this episode. You can email it, text it, Slack it, whatever works for you and is easy for you. The second way is to leave a super quick rating. And sometimes that can seem complicated, so I've made it as easy for you as I can. You simply have to go to ratethispodcast.com/cyber. That's ratethispodcast.com/cyber, and explains exactly how to do it. Either of these ways will take you less than 30 seconds to do, and it will mean the world to me. So thank you.